Save a lot or save a little. There's no difference when you hop in the car with the wrong person. Stay rural or go into the city. There is no safe place to hide. You'll end up a body on the side of the road. Nameless bones lying on the grounds and in the creeks, picked apart by animals and time, may be your fate. As a little-known killer drives the streets and the highways looking for his prey, we're close to Halloween, and it's time to get ghoulish as we delve into Fox Hollow Farm and Herbert Baumeister.
I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot.
Paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side. Cool name.
You get a Herbert Life now?
Yeah.
I don't.
I thought it was going to be like an MLM scheme.
Should have been Herbert Death, but ooh. Welcome to the Black Cat Report in episode 68. I'm your host, Joey, and with me is Gil.
Hello, hello.
And Betsabay.
Hi.
She's returning from her recent sabbatical. So today, we're going to start our two-part series on Herbert Baumeister and the Fox Hollow Farm. As we are in spooky season, we wanted to go through at least part of some horror. Well, to be fair, it's all horror, murders, and hauntings. So, right? So, 2 weeks ago, we released the last part of our series on the Benders, a serial killer frontier family. All those people murdered way back when, and then, well, most likely the Benders probably got away with it, which was what me and Gil figured that's what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been this awfully suspicious of the Bender family grow cry that's like I saw pop up down the street, but I don't think it's related.
That shouldn't be. You should probably just go spend the night. Probably a nice little Airbnb. This week, we're going to start with Herbert Baumeister and his story before we get into the hauntings for next week's episode. Also, if you have a spooky story, please send it to us via our email, contact@blackcat.report, or you can send it via our Instagram. You can send it as audio or as text, and we can read it later. This will be for our special Halloween episode. Well, yeah, pretty much the special Halloween episode. So please send it in to us. We're excited to hear them.
Yes.
I do want to also say before, as I didn't give them last week, the main source for this episode is going to be The Horrors of Fox Hollow Farm by Richard Estep with Robert Graves, and also a few other websites that will be listed in the show notes.
Also, before we hop into the story, I have to give a huge, huge, huge shout out to Miller's Monsters, who gave us an excellent review on his TikTok and on his Instagram and on all of his social medias. And, well, just a huge welcome from all of us here to anybody that's come over that way. And thanks.
Now let's get back to the story. Herbert Baumeister was born in Indianapolis, Indiana on April 7th, 1947. He was the oldest kid to his parents, anesthesiologist Dr. Herbert Eugene Baumeister and Elizabeth Baumeister, née Schmidt. And yes, I think I said it correctly, née Schmidt. Throughout his adolescence, he was described as just a little weird and antisocial. A story with one of his teachers told of him while he was young, he put a dead crow on her desk as a gift just to see her reaction. And Gil, I know you're pissed about this because he took another soldier from your crow army.
Yeah,
your brother. And
yeah. And well, Miss Robert.
Oh, Robert Crow.
Yeah, well, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up, right?
But wait, is there, I just want to make sure we're not leaving an important part out. Was she a taxidermist?
I don't think so. I think she was just a teacher.
Like, that would have made sense.
That would have been a great gift.
That would have been
a
good gift.
That would have been a fantastic
very thoughtful
gift.
Yeah, he's just like, here's
context.
Cheryl Crow, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Speaking about being pissed, he was actually noted as having urophilia or urinaglia, which are very hard words to say. Which, to be fair, if you like this, good on you. Not my place to judge of what color of shower you like, especially if it's a rich one. So let me explain this if you didn't get it. He is into golden showers.
Ew.
He likes being peed on.
No.
Yes.
Why?
I mean, I'm not going to kink shame.
Yeah, I mean, like, good on him, like, if that's what he likes.
Yeah.
Wait, how old is he?
At this point,
wait,
he's, like,
that
early,
is...
he's, like, 12. He's, like,
that's
12 or 13
weird.
At this point.
Okay.
Damn. Okay, how was it documented?
That's just so
in the
weird to think about that, like a kid, like
because he was very that. He asked about it a lot, and he was like real into it. And there's an instance later that we'll get into that it was when he gets older that you're kind of like, oh,
I'm only making fun of him here because he's a serial killer. We know that, but
yeah,
I do picture him coming home. Mommy, how come all the men get mad when I lean under them at the urinals?
And it's a crime.
They never complain on Sundays at church.
Oh,
anyways,
right? Oh, yeah. But that's true holy water right there.
Oh, well, my God.
Well, his father and mother noticed anyway that he was having a few problems in school. Well, obviously. And with his psyche. So they gave him a psych evaluation. But let's say this is a psych evaluation test from like the 1950s, 1960s. So let's take this with a grain of salt. But it did lead to an evaluation of young Herbert having schizophrenia.
You've got the wackawoo hysteria.
Yeah, the wackawoo hysteria. And I do believe a lot of times people that didn't necessarily have the what's diagnosed as schizophrenia were diagnosed as schizophrenic, and they may have had something like a multiple personality disorder, which is a little different, or might have just had some other problems that maybe something could have fixed real easily, or just, you know, it's part of it. It was part of the 50s, 60s, and 70s to just diagnose horribly, and then, oh yeah, cool, that's you, let's put you in a bathtub and shock you. That'll help.
You know what I was thinking the problem was? The front half of your brain. How about you just come over here real quick?
Let me put a spike in it.
Let me lobotomy.
Yeah, that was huge. So actually it was pretty huge all the way up until 2000, I think. It was pretty normal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, well, during high school, Herbert had trouble fitting in, hence the antisocial behavior comment earlier. The high school he attended, North Central High in Indianapolis, was known for sports. And like, well, one third of this podcast can relate. I'm looking at you, Gil, because me and Betsabe played a lot of sports in high school. He was not a sportly fella.
No.
Picture how much I chain smoke, like playing sports.
Yeah. Well, me and Betsabe both played high school sports. We both played tennis and we're really good at it. So we
were
we
fit
in then, though. Yep.
We were number one.
Still looking at you, Gil.
And we're all sitting here together today.
Yep, and we all no difference. Well, to be fair, it sounds like a lot of people that listen to this podcast doesn't part of that. So it doesn't really add into his future endeavors because he just wasn't a sporty guy. He was actually really small and really, really skinny. And a lot of people had this, you know, they were just like, that's your, when he gets married, they looked at him and they're like, that's your husband?
I'm just,
and it was just kind of this weird thing.
Some water.
Yeah, which is kind of sad. He was like not a horrible person at this time. He was just a young kid that just didn't fit in. So a lot of smart people do start out, you know, and successful people start out like this. They weren't good at sports in the high school, so they figured other ways to get there, you know, to make it that. So
are you like opening up to us right now?
No, I was good at sports.
Are we talking about Gil now?
We're all talking about Gil. You can always open up to us and tell us about your horrible high school days. Not on this podcast, maybe afterwards. Yeah, we'll get into it afterwards. So
just gonna tease me like that, okay?
It's gonna be part of your Halloween horror story episode, so yeah.
So then when my parents saw my report card.
I was gonna make a joke, but it is horrifying, so I am done. In 1965, after high school, he attended Indiana University. He wanted to follow in his father's footsteps, so he started studying anatomy, which might be a little clue to his future. While he was there, he met his future wife, Juliana Sater. And after a year, he decided, college was not for me. And I want to compare this because this sounds more like me, but I did leave college after 2 years. But I was just like, after 2 years, I was like, this is just not for me. I don't want to do this. So in 1967, he returned to Indianapolis and got a job working at the Indianapolis Star, which is the local big oldest newspaper in Indianapolis. And he was noted by his fellow co-workers as being very efficient and always well-dressed.
That man there is very efficient, always well-dressed.
Yeah, it sounds
like pee most of the time, though, but that's okay. That's his job as a bathroom attendant.
Exactly. Oh, well, he wrote for him, though. He didn't just work there. His dad helped him get that
job.
You
know, we have an actual desk. No, this is fine. I have bathroom problems. I'm just going to work here. And but you're, like, under me while I'm on the toilet. Nope. Oh, sorry. How did I get here?
Yeah, he was trying to take the golden parachute, though. Not the golden, you know, shower. Anyways, in 1971...
Half of the research for this episode was done on a dark area of Pornhub that Joey is now trying to hide from the government.
I watched a lot of documentaries to fix this. And next week, I will watch a lot more documentaries to get us into the mood for the spookiness.
Documentaries.
Let me tell you, RoboCock 69 was not the sequel to RoboCop.
Yeah. Duchess, the cat that's staying here, was judging me very harshly while I was watching the documentaries. Well, I'll go ahead and move forward.
Because your hands were busy.
Typing.
Oh, my God.
Typing.
Sorry, Benson.
Typing. Well, in 1971, Herb and Juliana got hitched, which after the very next year, he ended up spending 2 months in a psychiatric hospital for what he deemed was an outburst over a car problem.
Damn.
I've seen so many fathers do that exact same thing, though.
Honestly, I almost did that myself not too recently. I was just like, what's wrong with this car? Why is it now $1,300 when you quoted me $200 when I came in here?
Oh, yeah, I was there that day.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I had an outburst, but I didn't have to go to a psychiatric hospital yet. I mean, yeah. Well, after he was released, he got a job at the DMV. Honestly, don't people go crazy after they work at the DMV and not before they work there?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of feel like that's like, yeah, but the DMV is perfect because the folks at the DMV can do anything they fucking want to you and nobody can do a thing about it. Like, it's like cops without walking. They can just fucking whatever the fuck they want to you and you have to go to them. Malicious.
Yeah. And honestly, this kind of leads in what he did next. While you're saying that while working there, he sent a letter to the governor of Indiana. For some reason, it doesn't mention why he did.
Hey, Craig.
And he peed on the letter.
What the fuck?
Okay, I would do that. But that...
Ew.
Yeah, but and also, they like, caught him doing this, too.
Get the letter. How did he send a letter?
I don't know. They just saw him doing it. I guess they had, like, he wasn't in the bathroom, obviously. Or, I don't know, maybe he had the
Did he, like, open
the, bathroom,
the envelope and try to pee inside and then lick it closed or something? Like, what the
yeah,
fuck?
Yeah, like, but it's sweat.
No,
he peed on the,
like, so, like, as he was sent about to
I've
send a letter, he peed
male,
on it.
Yellow male's ridiculous. Oh, my God.
Well, he got fired after that stunt, in which I would hope that he did. Yeah. And, I mean, yes.
Obby.
Also, this is another little thing that he did, too, while he was working at the DMV. He sent out a Christmas card, and the picture on the front of the Christmas card. So he's married at this time, right?
Yeah.
Married, and I think he has a child. So he sent out the Christmas card, and it's him and another guy dressed in drag on the front, a picture of that. And to be fair, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
But, like, it just showed that, like, especially at this time, how he was being viewed as, like, just a normal, you know, heterosexual male, like, trying to be working in the DMV. He kind of got people looked at him weird, like, this guy's going a little bit nuts, but I guess he's okay.
I feel like, honestly, most of this stuff, it's like, sometimes this happens with serial killers, but they try to make out, like, you know, aspects of like that are outside of the cultural norm or whatever, at least like the cultural norm that they would show at 8 o'clock on NBC in like the early 2000s, you know, like you know, Seventh Heaven, like anything outside of that. It's just like, whoa, he tried wacky tobacky. And it's just like, and like, the dude's got a fetish, you know, he's skinny. He's antisocial. Honestly, at this point, he kind of just sounds like half the emo kids I knew in high school. Like, he really just doesn't sound that far off from, like, football. Oh. Like, you know, he's just chilling over on the side doing his thing. He's not necessarily, like, you know, kicking ass and, like, getting the best grades in the world. He's kind of, like, average around shit.
Yeah.
And, like, he has a temper issue. And it's just like, that's, like, a lot of people are like that. So...
Yeah, he's not horrible right yet. I mean, he's, you know, as we know, already said he's a serial killer. But at this point in the story, he's okay. He's just like, he's fine. He's fine. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you heard that your friend sent a letter to the governor and urinated on it when you're young, I mean, he's not super old.
I would have,
you know, I would have laughed.
Like, gave
I would have laughed.
A high five.
Yeah, right. You would have laughed. So thinking about that, it's just like, okay, this is fine.
Yeah.
Well, throughout the late 70s and early 80s, Herb's behavior started becoming more erratic.
Oh.
He was arrested for a hit and run, which he caused, and then was almost convicted of insurance fraud, except that he was acquitted after a bench trial. So, like, they had a real quick trial and got, you know, the judge came on the bench and was like, all right, I don't see any evidence for this, and mm-hmm. never really got to pass that.
Didn't stick.
Yeah, it didn't stick. And which, honestly, you know, once we come to find out later, he might have tried to. So, who knows?
Okay.
And around this time, he and Juliana had three children in the early 80s.
What? Why do all the serial killers have so many children?
I don't know. I guess they're just trying to be normal. You know, they're trying to do what they think is normal in this time to kind of get by.
Well, babies
you know?
Are like really good bait. Like you can use them for anything.
Sure.
Just like, oh, thank God you're here, hitchhiker, as I'm driving. I need help with my baby. And they're like, oh, I guess I have to ride with you. Like, that's how it happens.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And I mean, at this time, he was also known, and by all accounts, as an amazing father. And he gave his kids whatever they needed. He lavished them with extravagant gifts.
The most patient man in the world when it comes to changing diapers. I mean, I've seen him spend hours just getting pissed on and shit on. Never complains.
Yeah, he was completely a golden father. You know, as we... And we love him for that. He was a great father, right? You know, and like that's... And a lot of times that's hard to come by. So, you know, that's great that he was doing that. And well... At this point, Julianne and Herb decided they would make a kind of a thrift store business.
Naturally, but okay.
Yeah. In 1988, they started a thrift store called Save-A-Lot, which basically just received donations and sold them. And if that doesn't sound familiar, it should, because that's what Goodwill is.
Knew it.
And I'm going to freaking derail us for 1 second. Because I worked at Goodwill.
We don't accept Goodwill, that at the show. You did? What?
Yeah, I worked at Goodwill when I was younger, when I lived in Virginia.
I can
and
see
Goodwill
that.
Isn't named Goodwill for goodwill towards people or giving or that such crap.
Oh.
But it's named for the founder, who is named Arthur Goodwill. They make a lot of money. And while they do give away some of it to help, they do some good things. Most of it's profit. And they piss me off. So it's a great place to find some awesome clothes when you need to.
Yeah, I really don't have a
problem. That's why I never felt bad, like, when I shoplift at Goodwill.
High five for that. We're air fiving right now. So if you can't see that, we're an audio medium, but me and Betsabe just air fived because thank you for helping me in my quest to bring down Goodwill. And if you hate me, you can send it to haters@blackcat.report. That's our email. Send it. Again, Gil will read it and yell it at me.
I'll get it. It'll make me smile.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to say two bombs in 2 weeks. Last week it was, when I was smoking peyote this week, it was, and that's why I don't feel bad when I shoplift from Goodwill.
And that's why we love Betsabe, because she's so open and honest about her crimes.
I try.
Yeah. Well, anyways, back to the story. After their first store did so well, they opened a second one. So they basically franchising at this point. And all seemed to be going well in Bowmaster's life. Well, starting in 1980, there started being a whole lot of missing persons that eventually were attributed to Herb Bowmaster.
Man, these donations
already?
Just keep pouring in.
Yeah, he's not even that far. He's not even into his real point yet. Though, to be fair, they will not officially charge to him. He most likely murdered them. So it's here we'll get into a bit of Herb's MO as a serial killer. As we know from the earlier story of his life, he was a happily married man who at times was a bit erratic, but still a lovely family man. He made a lot of trips back and forth from his Save-A-Lot stores and treated his children to everything they could need. Well, creeping on the inside of this man was a horrific and diabolical asshole. So, we all know that still in the 80s, The gay population was not listened to nor helped by police or authorities. They were part of the lesser then. And if you didn't know that, then you never researched Jeffrey Dahmer or lived in the 1980s. And I would say that you should research it if you haven't, or you can just watch the dramatized Netflix show Dahmer, which is wonderfully portrayed by Evan Peters. We also are not sponsored by Netflix. I just really like
but
that.
But we are sponsored by Evan Peters.
Yes, Evan Peters does sponsor us. So Evan Peters, yeah. Can you reach out to us and so we can get some compensation for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, just check bounced.
Yeah, yeah.
Check bounced.
Yeah. Well, anyway, in the period between 1980 and 1991, Herb Baumeister murdered 11 people.
Damn.
Well, to be fair, most of these people were reported missing, but there was never a connection until afterwards. Yeah. This was the phase of his murders where he was named the I-70 Strangler, which is phase one. And I want to say that, well, Herb had a different phases of his murders because, well, he was prolific. For now, we'll just stay at the phase of the I-70 Strangler.
Okay.
Starting in 1980, Herb began his murders, or at least the possibility of his first murders. There could have been more before. We just don't know. We're just focusing on the ones that he was, they're like, okay, this is his MO. This is what he did. Later found out that a 15-year-old named Michael Sean Petrie was discovered naked in Hamilton County, Indiana on June 16th. Despite Michael being of young age, he was a sex worker and would often ride in the client's cars to wherever they would go do the deed. The coroner's office noted that he was killed by strangulation with no traces of drugs or alcohol. This would be his MO. He would pick up most of his victims from the local gay bars around Indianapolis, mostly being described as a random mustachioed man.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, in 1985, a teenager named Eric Roker disappeared, then was found a few days later, shirtless and in a stream near Preble County, Ohio. So I think he's getting closer to you, Gil.
I don't know where the hell Preble County is.
I think it's near the border of Indianapolis. It's probably not that close to you, honestly. But
well, no, that's like right near, yeah. Anyways.
Huh? This guy might have been around when you were growing up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was born in 1990, Joey.
Wait, so was he gay?
It continues. So, well, yeah, so he was at least he was bisexual at this point.
It's a good
point,
time to
yeah.
have this conversation, Betsabe. Sometimes. People can
yeah it was noted like that he was
variety of people
yeah.
and genders.
It was mostly noted that he was bisexual because he had his wife,
but he only liked golden showers from men
more than one gender. They might have different sorts of actions with each one of those, and sometimes women pee.
Heck.
What?
I've never seen it,
no.
But I've heard of it. Yes.
Sounds mythological.
But hey, that's what we do here on this show.
Going to your original question.
What are we doing this show?
I have no idea.
We take breaks to go to the bathroom. But
I'm not done with my question.
I was going to answer your question.
Was he also killing women?
No, he never killed a woman.
Also, yeah, I mean, this kind of fits like the whole process. Like you just brought up with like Dahmer and stuff. It's just like it's super easy for serial killers to develop, or for, let's put it this way, when somebody might be in the early stages of becoming a serial killer, they're just, I guess, a murderer. They might not be able to get to their second victim, third victim, fourth victim because they're actually murdering people that are a part of a population or a social class that the cops pay attention to and like listen yep. to and respond to, and they put money and energy and effort and time and news into it. Killing a bunch of like 14-year-old like sex workers mm-hmm. out in the middle of fucking nowhere, especially at this time, cops aren't going to give a fuck.
Yep.
Like, half the time, those 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds were probably hiding from the cops anyways. The cops might not have even seen them or knew that they were there. And for all the families knew, if the families even did care to look for those kids, right, the kid had gone missing 5 months earlier, 6 months earlier. So all of a sudden, it's just like, we find a body, you know, they ask around, they eventually find out, like, oh, apparently he's associated with sex work. And then eventually they tie it back to the family. And then eventually they hear from the family. But, like, super difficult to track down a murderer or a serial killer in that situation. Not hard to track down a serial killer when they're, like, you know, murdering a 45-year-old blonde white lady living in a $900,000 house. You know, that'll get the news. So,
sure. Yeah. Like, adding in that they were also gay to that point of, like, that, you know, as we looked at Dahmer's part of it, is that they just were like, ew, that's, we don't want to deal with that, is what the police are thinking, you know? And it's just like, come on, guys, you're stupid. Be an idiot. Yeah. You guys are idiots. They're the same as everybody else. And anyways, diatribe, me and Gil get on sometimes around this kind of crap. But just dealing with the facts of being police work at this time, they actually were looking into this, which is kind of funny. They just didn't have any clues because there was no clues at this time. These bodies were just being found on the side of the road, and there was there was very few witnesses. And also the families of these kids were I ran to it time and time again reading their reading the victims info, is that the families were like, no, they weren't gay. They were never gay. Yeah. They would never go to this gay club in Indianapolis. And so the detectives researching this are just like, well, we know that they were there. Can you give us specific times that, or specific places that they go? The parents were like, no, they would never do that. So the detectives would get stonewalled in a lot of this, being like, well, now we can't follow up on this because we're being told that this is not part of their life. This is random, even though we kind of have these leads. So it really hurt detectives that actually were trying to do right at this time, that families also, who kind of, some of them kicked out these kids from their house just because they were gay. But again, we're going into a lot of details from the victims in this, which is the victims were the victims, and it's really sad. But going into back into Eric Rutger, he had ligature marks around his neck from a rope and a burn on his shoulder, which now we know the MO from Herb is that he would choke them to death. So Eric was heading to a few interviews that day for a summer job that he had, but he did not end up going to any of them. Witness claimed that he was waiting for the bus that day, but ended up accepting a ride from a passing car, which later find out was Herb. So the last one I'm going to describe out of the 11, only going into three here because it's very similar things that they were all just found dead, was a guy, a 42-year-old named Otto Gary Becker, was found in a ditch next to the gravel road in Henry County, Indiana. This murder, however, had two witnesses. They said they saw Otto driving along I-70 with another man driving in a car. However, they could not ID the murderer. And they eventually got into it where they were talking to the deputies and the detectives, and they showed them just a list of suspects that they had, and none of them were the suspects for that they recognized. So Herb obviously is nowhere on anybody's radar at this point. He's just a random guy, random mustachioed guy coming to the gay clubs, just picking up people and taking them out.
I mean, I gotta say, like, owning a thrift store is probably the best position to be in if you're going to be a serial killer. You have access to an unlimited supply of costumes and disguises.
Yep.
Just think about it. There's fucking everything there. Wigs, other colored wigs.
Right, yeah.
Smaller wigs. You can get any kind of wig.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm just saying it's brilliant.
And it's great. Like, he had a family. He was looked on as like a great person in the community. Nobody had any idea. His wife didn't have any idea.
They all forgot he worked for the DMV at some point.
They forgot he worked for the DMV, that he was had psych evaluations, that he was schizophrenic, that he was in the mental hospital for a little bit. And like all these little things add up to what he would become. So it can't be overstated that this wasn't even in his most recognizable time period. This is his I-70 strangler period, and we're about to get into the other period of murders in his life, which is just crazy that he had two specific, complete and utter, like, different parts of his life. So Herb was also not a suspect that even, you know, anybody would look at. They were tributes to him after the fact due to the proximity and his way of killing, asphyxiation. So we're gonna find out that becomes a new thing that he likes.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I want to get back to, he sounds fun. He's probably the best person to have at parties. So let's get back to Herb and Juliana's life while all of this was happening, right? So they opened two Save-A-Lots and then had a few kids. And then in 1991, bodies just stopped being found on the side of the road.
Just people stopped looking for them? Or
no.
Did the bodies have rainbow flags on them and the cops just ignored them and drove by? Like, what?
No. They literally stopped finding them. Because they were looking, obviously, because there were so many happening at this time, especially because there were other serial killers working in the same time period in the same road.
Pretty much a tradition.
I'll get into it later about the other guy that was working, the other serial killer in the area. So the reason this happened was because Herb and Juliana bought a new place, which was called Fox Hollow Farm.
Where are they getting all this money from?
They own two Save-A-Lots stores. Yeah, their business was killing it.
See, the trick with the title is it doesn't tell you who saves a lot.
It's them, not you. Yep. Well, Fox Hollow Farm was a huge estate that spanned about 18 acres in Westfield, Indiana. The house itself was a 1977 Tudor-style home built on the 18 acres. Yeah,
and like a pretty new house at the time.
Yeah, and it's actually a quite beautiful home, and the painting and style kind of looks like the Grove Park Inn with like it's like white top underneath its underneath the rafters with like brown wood style cross beams and a beautiful stone style brick. So it's kind of just honestly just looking at it, I would buy this property. It's pretty nice. Yeah. Well, they purchased it from the owner of the home for the price of almost $1 million, $979,000, which they said at this
time was like $40 million.
They said at this time for this property and the house, like the mansion, it was like nothing because
Well, keep going. I'm looking that up for inflation.
Well, the contract was pretty good for this huge place and a beautiful house. They said they put down a small down payment and would pay the whole house off to the guy they bought it from in 5 years.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I did some math.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No, that's...
What's the...
About $1 million in 1991 is $2,259,831.13.
Dang.
That's how fucked we've all become in our lifetime. Sorry, go ahead.
Over doubled.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, say they put down like $10,000 down on the house, right? So I'm sure they probably put more down. But let's just say they put down $10,000. To pay off the house in 5 years, they would be paying $16,150 a month.
Damn.
On their mortgage.
They're making good money.
They're making good money. And they
with three kids. Damn.
And with three kids, yep. Mm. So they must have been doing really, really well with their stores. Well,
we're doing perfect with our budget. It's just... this gas bill for the cars just keeps going up. We don't know why.
Yeah. Well, this became their home and would be Herb's new workspace. Wait. For a while, Herb was happy and content, as was his family.
Their kids were hanging pictures.
Their kids were going to private schools, and Juliana was helping run the stores. Herb, throughout the 90s, was continuing his murders that originally started in the 80s. But now he was focusing on things a little closer to his home.
He's getting older. He doesn't want to go out as much. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Yep. As was said, in 1991, bodies stopped being found on I-70. Mm. And we know that this coincided with the home being bought in 1991.
Mm.
Also want to add that during the early 80s, the Indiana bar scene was also terrorized by another serial killer. He was known as the Highway Killer, Larry Eiler.
He also had
a similar demographic for who he killed. His demographic was the same, but his method of killing was different. He would use knives and stab his victims instead of strangling them. So we can clearly define the murders from Larry to Herb, because Larry was also caught in 1983, which was around the time that Herb started his murder spree as the I-70 strangler. So there was kind of a defining moment where Larry Eiler gets caught and then Herb starts. Even though they had,
you know,
like
what? That's
two
a good
years.
Idea.
Yeah, right. Even though they were doing different things, they still had the same demographic. Larry Eiler killed. Larry Eiler killed younger kids though. He killed anywhere from like 12 to I think 16. There might have been a little older in here, but most of the time Herb was killing anywhere from like 15 to like 40. So it was just the demographic we're crossing over in like a little Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's here in 1991 he would start what was the second phase of his murders, the Fox Hollow Farm killings. So there were 9 identifiable bodies found at Fox Hollow Farm. And honestly, they're still identifying people to this day. I just saw an article that they ID'd somebody yesterday.
Holy shit.
No way.
They used DNA to find the person. Yep, who it was. The bones.
Jesus.
I'm going to say a really shocking number and then put it in context for you. At the Fox Hollow Farm, when they dug it up, they found over 5,500 bones on the property.
Are you kidding me?
To put that in context, there are 206 bones in an adult's body. So extrapolating, I know, Gil.
How many?
That's probably around 26 people. And they identified 9. And these are only the bones they found.
I just love this new gardening hobby you've gotten into, Herbert. You're just putting flower beds everywhere. Yeah, I love flowers. And that's where the bread came from. Yeah, it looks good on you.
How did this skinny guy, like, kill people?
Well, he just asphyxiated him, and I think a lot of it was
spending all of his time doing sports.
I mean, yeah. That's kind of like a sport. It's exercise.
Strangling is actually quite hard from watching, you know, like from.
From watching, what
not
experience.
I was
going to
say watching, watching shows, watching
this
shows.
It's going to be a recap of the episode after our Flat Earth episode when you had to go on and be like, listen, everybody, I don't actually.
Okay. So watching shows, and I know everybody watches murder shows.
Yeah.
Every time they talk about the guys who are the murderers are like, it's actually really hard to strangle somebody and they get tired doing it. You know, and
sure,
so like
Joey.
Gil knows this too from listening to the last podcast on the left, and they always talk about it with the murderers. So, well, during 1993, Herb hit his stride. 5 young men and boys went missing throughout 1993 and eventually were found on the farm. 3 more went missing in 1994, and another went missing in 1995. There was a funny coincidence. They all seemed to disappear in the warm summer months. They all went missing April through August. And one thing I asked myself is, how does a serial killer hide this from their significant other and kids?
Yeah, when their kids are home from school.
Well, for Herb specifically, his parents had a condominium in Lake Wawasee in northern Indiana. The lake was 2.5 hours north of Indiana and could feasibly be where his family was while he was committing the murders, because he liked to take his kids up there. His wife liked to take his kids up there.
I know we just got here, but I forgot my car keys at home. Gotta go.
Yeah. I imagine I imagine he would say that, oh, I can't go. I have work stuff to do. You know, Juliana, you go ahead and take the kids up. I'll meet you up there. You know, and so his family was away. I gotta go to the Finger Lakes. But he would commit the murders while they were gone. And that was honestly something I kind of extrapolated from it myself. It's not really something that people thought, but honestly, that's how
Makes
he did
sense.
It. They were gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would allow him the time and ease to lure victims back to his house and then strangle them.
Wow. So, look at the really nice brick, and you got the wood inlay over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's easy. Like, they
looks just like
there's an explanation later about what, you know, how he got a lot of the people back. So we'll talk about after committing 7 murders and burying them at the farm, Herb met a man named Roger Allen Goodlett, who was 33. Roger disappeared after visiting his mother's house and going to a gay bar on 16th Street in Indy. He was also noted later as being seen with Herb a few weeks earlier at the bar as well. So people started noticing and connecting things here, but that was found out later. Well, after his disappearance, his family went to the police to report him missing. Literally the day after he went missing. So like after he went to Herb's house that night from the bar, his mom couldn't reach him. So she was like, well, he's gone. I got to go find him. The police in this part of the story, They said, we can't do anything till 30 days after the last day he was seen.
Look, I don't know who you think you're talking to over here, but do I look like a man that has gaydar? I don't. Okay, I can't find him. I can't find him. No idea where to start.
Well, that's pretty much what happened, yeah, because they just didn't care. And they didn't care either. You know, like, they, some of the detectives were working on it. The police were just like, I don't give a
shit. Half of them also went there after work and didn't want their families to, like, see the photos of them coming into the bar. And the bartender being like, hey, Steven!
She's like, my name's not Steven. I'm Even.
You know my name is Star while I'm
here. Evan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Evan, not Even, sorry. You're just a little odd. Well, Roger's mother...
I left my car to you last night.
Roger's mother, persistent, said this would not do, and she hired a private investigator to find her son. Smartest move that anybody in the story did.
The
private investigator... Yeah. Well, the private investigator and detective named Mary Wilson met up and started searching for clues, but the trail went cold at almost every turn. Eventually, they found a friend of Roger Goodlett's said that he had met a man in a bar in Indy that might know of a strange individual in the gay bar scene. So, the man was named...
There were so many back then.
The way that they found this guy, he was just kind of telling a story to one of the detectives. And the detective was like, hold on. Who said what about a weird guy in a bar? And then he was like, let's narrow in on that. So they found this guy, and in a lot of stories, he's named, in quotations, the informant, because obviously he's not really need to be known, especially if the Herb had other people that were also murdering with him. So,
yeah.
But later, it was noted that the man's name was Tony Harris. So Tony was a patron of the bar. He noted a newcomer to the bar who was looking at a missing persons poster of Roger Goodlett. So...
Take this home from memory.
Yeah, he's like looking at this guy and he's like, did you know? Tony asked, did you know him? And he's like, no.
Why did he even act weird there? I'm just saying, like, he could have like so easily just been like, I feel like I saw him, or like, he could have came up with a lie so quick, so fast to like explain. You're supposed to look at missing persons photos. Like, that's what they're there for. That's not weird.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're parked in a parking lot in the middle of the fucking day while everybody's shopping, and they're like, oh, hey, did you just get here? And it's like, I was masturbating for 6 hours. Just like, why would you tell me that? You could have just told me you were getting ready to leave.
Yeah, right? Like, you don't need to tell
the
truth.
Why did he get weird about this?
Yeah, he just didn't know what to say, I think, at the point, and he made it weird. And that's why Tony also kind of was like, okay, I'm going to note this guy.
Well, I remember that stash.
Tony also then introduced himself. And Herb introduced himself as a man named Brian Smart. And so smart.
Awesome freak. That is an awesome fake name.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, Herb, or Brian, as we'll call him, said that his employer had a pool at his house and they can go have some fun at the pool. Who wouldn't want to go to a pool party, right? With a random stranger.
I mean, but like, I can't think of anything more fun than going over to somebody's boss's house to hang out.
Yeah, with a cool pool party, Gil.
Yeah, that
I can
make it
name
cool.
A few people that would actually be like, oh, you've got a pool?
Yeah.
Let's go.
I mean,
like,
I
why
didn't
not,
have,
right?
I didn't have central air at my house until this year. So for like the past 10 years, I haven't had air conditioning in my house besides like window units. And I would do some things for pools.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows, you know, what you have done for pools.
Mostly just kind of sneak into hotels, but...
Well, that's also a good way to do it, too. Well,
yeah,
it's fun. It's fun. It's fine. It's
a little
fine.
Bit of murder and then just walk right in. It's super easy. It's a discount pass.
Yeah, we don't like to admit to crimes on here.
I never admitted to
you. You don't.
Except for me.
Except that's Spadus, but, you know, that's fine. It's never that bad. It's never that bad, honestly. Anyways, Tony noted that they kept driving and driving and driving and driving and driving and eventually left the downtown of Indy and then kept driving until he pulled up to a mansion, in Tony's words, right?
Okay. So,
well, there was actually a pool at the other end of this trip. So Tony was just kind of like, Bob, this is okay. There's actually a pool here. He's not lying,
but he was
right?
found in it. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead. Sorry.
Jump ahead in the story that didn't even actually happen. So Tony went and got changed into some trunks that, you know, that Brian
Everybody
had
has
there.
A spare on them. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And when he came back, Herb, or Brian, was already in the pool and ready to chill. They're pooling and chilling. So as they talked in the pool, Brian brought up coming.
This guy's real good with casual conversation.
I know.
Right? Well,
he ever come?
Well, he basically said, hey, you know what makes coming even better?
All right.
Being choked until almost dying, then coming.
Wow.
All right. Yep.
So this episode's rated R.
It is rated R. So, well, I'm no David Carradine. I know. But I don't think I would
but
do this
does
with
dress
a stranger.
As Batman and hang out in his closet. Sorry.
Not me, Brian.
We are unhinged this week, y'all. We've had a lot of rough weeks leading up.
We're all tired with very little sleep.
But y'all, honestly, we need a lighthearted episode after all the serious episodes we've been having.
I like that this is a lighthearted episode. We're making it a little lighthearted because the serial killer's stupid and funny. Well, Herb wrapped a hose around the neck of Tony.
Okay.
Very tenderly, you know, like not really like a murderer would at first.
Yeah,
so,
just
slowly. And then slowly just started tightening it tighter and tighter.
Okay.
Until Tony was close to dying.
And so choking works.
Smartly, which honestly, when I see people getting in like, God damn it. That's about it. Every time I watch a movie and somebody's getting drowned, I'm always like, why don't you just pretend to be drowned and then try to get up, right? You know, that I feel like that would be a good defense, right? So Tony
did that have to do with me?
Because last time you said that I was okay, that I was killing people. That's what you meant. So
honestly, I would not be surprised.
Well, thanks.
She takes no accountability for her accusations.
No,
she forgot it immediately, but it built up
out.
An insecurity.
Yeah. Well, until Tony was close to dying, he pretended to pass out and went limp. So Herb let go and stood up. He was like, yay, my job's done.
Time for a popsicle.
For a popsicle. So much to Herb's surprise, Tony opened his eyes.
That was great. Holy shit.
And then supposedly,
and
then supposedly Tony said, it's you. I'm going to the authorities. And then Herb said, who's going to believe you?
This guy sucks at comebacks.
He does. He doesn't have good comebacks. Well, honestly,
I thought that was a great comeback.
This is like so much time involved in a situation. Like somebody just tried to like strangle you to death and you came out, like you came back into consciousness and realized, holy fuck, I'm at the serial killer's house alone with them. And you're like, hey, you cut that out. I'm going to tell the police. Like, it's just like, bro, just run. You don't need to justify shit. Just fucking run.
I know.
Get the fuck out of there. Steal the car. Go. Like, you don't need to be like, no, I want you to remember this face. And he's like, oh, I will. And you're like, no, that's not what I mean. I want you to remember me when they come for you. Oh, I'll remember when they come. Oh, no, that's not what I mean.
Oh, my God.
Damn it.
Pretty much.
That's late.
So afterwards, Tony smartly thought, well, to go to the authorities.
Smartly. My last name. Never mind.
That's
sorry,
Brian
I fucked
Smart.
That up.
No, he's
damn
the
it.
Other one. I'm going to actually have to live through this to tell on this guy.
Damn it.
And I'm at his house. I have no car. I'm basically in my trousers. This guy's got me in a pool. And I don't have any evidence that he really did this. And really, who is going to believe me? But
exactly.
He still thought, like, I have to get out of here. And I have to
obviously
be okay. I have to be okay. So they just started drinking. And he was kind of pretended like it didn't happen. And then they kept drinking and partying. And eventually, Herb or Brian passed out.
Okay.
He was drunk, so he's just like, oh, he passed out. So Tony's like, okay, yeah.
A drinking competition.
Yes.
That's what did happen.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the next day, Herb was like, okay, like he's just like, nobody's going to believe this guy.
You got a hangover, Herb. I mean, Brian.
Yeah.
Bet you had aspirin, too. Maybe we have to take a ride into town to the Rite Aid. Yeah,
it would be the Rite Aid.
Head that way. I need a new shovel anyways. Perfect, perfect. Yeah, let's just take a little ride into town to the Rite Aid.
To the Rite Aid. So, you know, Herb also noticed that Tony left his car back at the bar, right? Because they drove out together in the same car.
Yeah.
Which, I do want to say, Tony actually was smart because Herb tried to get him to drive his car out too, so there would not be a car left at the bar. Mm. So if his car wasn't left there, there would be nobody knowing that he was gone out with somebody else, thought he would go home. So Tony was smart in that he left the car at the bar.
Hey, just because I'm going home doesn't mean my car has to. Let's go.
Yep. You can't, what's the quote? You can't go home, but your car has to stay here. So I don't know. It's a new quote I'm making up. So, well,
DMV themed.
Yeah, it's a DMV themed episode. Yep. So after Tony was driven back to his car, Herb dropped him off. No big deal.
Yep.
Tony then was like, I'm going to the police.
Now I'm going to the police. Oh, the bar's open.
Literally. Oh, the bar's open. Go have another drink. No, he went straight to the police.
Okay. Yep.
And the private investigator. So they both interviewed Tony. He described the land. He couldn't exactly remember how they got there and like where it was, but he described the land and that was a beautiful mansion in his words.
Okay.
Sadly, the private investigator and the detective, they looked in the area, but they couldn't find
the place. This is Indianapolis. It's impossible that there's beautiful land. It must have been another state.
He must have knocked him out
and drove him out of the state. Yeah. Maybe the country.
Yeah. And they didn't find him. So they're like, okay, well, they basically were like, hey, if he comes back, like, keep your eye out. You know, we know you like to go to this bar, same bar. It's like your bar. You're a patron here. Keep an eye out for this guy. And when you do find him, get his license plate.
Mm.
Smart thing. So a year passed after Tony was was almost killed and, you know, strangulated.
Yeah.
I would like to say it's a new word I made up.
Okay.
And Herb went back to the same bar he met Tony in. Tony saw him and then got his license plate finally.
Gotcha, bitch.
Yep.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be seen by Herb either because he knew that the jig would be up and he would be gone super quick. So he wasn't seen by Herb, got the license plate, sent it to the PI and the detective. They traced the vehicle back to Herb, and now they finally had their suspect.
Damn.
Well, to be fair, they really didn't have any evidence, just the word of Tony. So
now
and
they
the
finally
suspicion.
Have a suspect.
Yes, they finally have a suspect, just basically on the word of Tony and the suspicion that he was the murderer of most of these people, because they were slowly putting it together that all these people, obviously as they should have, were murdered in the same way, same area, and they were going missing from similar bars and same MO. So it's like they're kind of slowly putting this together, thinking that we have a serial killer, ladies and gentlemen. So it's like, okay, cool. Like, let's find this guy. So the detective was like, I am going to go and just ask this guy.
You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to fucking go there. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to fucking wait. I'm going right now. It's like, sir, shouldn't we have like backup or like multiple witnesses so that we can hold this up? That you know how hard I've been working on this case. Like, literally, I've just been chilling at home watching ESPN all the time. I've been working so hard on this case for years, and I need that bonus. It's like, all right. I mean, if you're gonna just head out there, he left. I haven't even given him the address. Yeah, he's just driving now.
Yeah, pretty much. So Mary Wilson, who was the detective, she went to Herb's Save-A-Lot store to question him.
Oh,
work. Yeah, right. She got him at work. So the receptionist was like, or the person working at the cashier place was like, hey, he's in the back. You want me to get him? She's like, please go get him and you talk to him. Well, the detective straight away asked, have you ever visited a gay bar?
To
like, just out loud in the store.
Right.
And Herb's like, No, no, obviously not. Well, she then was like, look, we have your license plate. We have this guy saying you were there. We know you were there. And so eventually he was just like, okay, yes, I have been to a gay bar, but my wife doesn't really know. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, I've been to one, but I can't really, you know, I have a family. Please don't be, you know, like that. And then she literally right after that was like, I want to search your property. Can I search your property? And Herb's like, no. No, you cannot.
Damn.
No,
his
you cannot
brain
search my
cell
property.
Sparked, and he's like, I can say no.
Yeah. Like, what the it was just so weird. Like the detective kind of like shot herself by being like, can you like right away doing this instead of like
saying.
Slowly. Yeah, it was just kind of like,
I'm gonna go now. I'm just like, shouldn't we like get warrants and plan this and get witnesses and a team? Like, fuck that.
That's me as a cub.
Yeah, yeah.
Now.
Well, what's funny is that Herb gave her the number of his lawyer, who he said was his lawyer. And so the detective was like, okay, I'll call the lawyer. The
Brian
lawyer was
Spott,
like, well,
attorney at law here.
That's hilarious. They called the law firm and they're like, well, we don't have any client named Herbert. And she's like,
Brian,
well,
no.
Yeah, yeah. We got a Brian, though. But it's just, she's like, what do you mean? Just like, yeah, we don't have any retainers or anything for Brian. Sorry, you got me saying Brian already. For Herbert. Yep. And so she was like, okay. So she goes back to Herbert, and Herbert's like, no, just call my lawyer, and gave him the number. And at this time, they were basically
God,
like,
so funny.
Yeah,
that was a one,
like
not a seven. What are you doing? Of course you couldn't get a hold of him.
And it was the same law firm. But but they did this another time, and she went back again. And then he finally, the third time, they were like, he wired the law firm a retainer. So that finally they answered the phone, and she's like, she asked the law firm, like, oh, now you're representing him. Can I search the property? And the law firm just goes, nope, and hung up.
My God.
This is not... All right, Betts, man, take everything back that I said about how serial killers get away with shit earlier. This is not a story about catching a serial killer. This is a story about the, 11 years, 12 years that were spent ignoring obvious signs. Like, I'm sure there are so many hidden gems here. Like, mm-hmm. literally, like, just, like, save more little vests that are left next to them, old license plates, like, just DNA evidence everywhere in the form of pee. Like, there's just so much evidence. They're just like, damn it, we can't find a fucking thing. I think it's in ditches, sir. What do you mean? I'm developing a theory. You know how we always find them next to ditches? Yes. What if the ditches come out at night and kill them?
It's the ditch's fault.
We gotta get out of here. That's why all the killers are named after roads. Fuck, he's right. We're gonna go back to the precinct. We gotta meet me at the bar, gentlemen.
We gotta chase the serial killer. Meet me at the bar. We gotta talk to Brian Smart. He's the only one that knows what's going on. Well,
you guys.
Now, the detectives were pretty much stonewalled. There's nothing really they could do because they just already...
They were used to
it. And they used to it. And they shot it already. They were just like, they went out and basically told this guy they were investigating.
11
so,
years on the force. Yep. All these 11 years of experience. You've only been investigating one guy I know.
The PI was also like, why did you do that? He's just like, I've been doing this for so long. Why did you do that? And it was just so funny to like hear about the guy just being like, oh, okay. Well, this is fine. I'm just going to have to do harder work.
What was her name? Her name was Mary.
Mary Wilson.
You got me. My name's not Mary Wilson. It's wig off. It's Brian Smart. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep.
Again, wigs. That was the fucking... This makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
No wonder the detective can never catch him because they were never in the same place at the same time.
And they never were ever again. So...
I knew it.
Herb told his wife when she asked about why there was police being investigating and stuff, and he basically was just like, well, there was a disgruntled employee that was harassing me.
Oh my God.
And that's why I was being investigated. Mm-hmm. And at this point, you know, it's not, you know, I can see why she'd believe him. He's still the same guy. He hasn't changed, you know, from what he was. There was no weird moods. There was no weird things happening besides the few things that happened earlier. But it seemed like he had turned a corner. He was on the straight and narrow. He was just like
gardening.
Yeah, gardening. And they were loving their new house. Well, that was about to be almost flipped upside down. In the winter of 1985, Herb's son found a skeleton in the woods under the brush.
What?
So not
it's
buried.
Halloween.
I want to reiterate, not buried, just in the woods around their house. Like a kid normally does, he put a stick in the skull and scared his sister and was like waving it around back at the house.
Oh my God.
I would have done that.
Yeah, right. And so the kid was just like, ah, look at it, it's a skull. And it's just like, ah. And so then, you know, he's obviously playing with it. And, you know, Juliana's like, what's that? Where did you find that? And can you show me where you found that? And so, you know, the son is like, goes like, okay, let's go, mom. And like takes her to the woods.
Officer. I found the strangler.
Yeah,
at her
I found
son.
The strangler. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's just like, take me to him. So take me to the body. So the son takes him to the woods. No. The son goes to the woods and is like, okay, here's where it is. And so she's like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah, how
there's
do you
a skeleton
to
here.
That?
She's like, that's a skeleton in our woods. So she's like, okay, cool. She, you know, still takes the skull back. And she, wait, she's like, okay, I gotta ask Herb what this is.
Mm-hmm. You found the funniest thing today. Your son found the funniest thing.
Yeah,
oh,
pretty
yeah.
much. So,
what you find? We were out in the woods, see?
In the woods, see?
We're out in the woods, see? So he basically told her that it was one of his father's old anatomical skeletons from his practice.
What the fuck?
Laying
in
the woods.
As an anesthesiologist?
Yes.
Why would he? That doesn't make any sense.
That's so funny, though.
I mean, you can use that excuse for like, yeah, that's why I've got this huge collection of morphine. That's a legitimate excuse. It's like, it's from my dad's practice.
He could have just been like, someone dropped that off as a donation.
Oh, that old thing?
Yeah.
He could have also just said, I don't know.
I know.
Yeah.
A very simple answer. Oh my God.
You know,
like very simple.
Yeah. He also, after he said that, he was like, don't worry. I just keep these things. You know, I'm like a pack rat sometimes. And it'll be moved soon.
What?
And so Juliana, knowing her husband,
you
was like,
said that
yeah,
when
he's
still
a little
had
bit
flesh on it.
He's a little bit quirky.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
A...
it's been out there for 12 years.
It's out there 12 years. So they basically, she was like, okay, he's a little quirky. I know that. It's fine. Like, it'll be moved. So, like, she went out a week later, and she was like, okay, there's no bones here. It's
You've
fine.
Got a week.
Yeah, literally. And so she went out there, checked. The bones weren't there anymore. She's like, okay, guess it's fine.
Thank God.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's out of sight, out of mind is what they say. So
goes in the bedroom. It's already tucked into bed next to me. Oh, hey, honey.
It's there. Yep. Talk about getting boned in bed.
Oh.
So
wow.
As the...
Oh.
Well,
good one.
As the detective was running out of options, obviously, the detective decided... the other thing didn't work.
It
so
would have
now
been
let's...
so easy if they could have searched the first time. They would have literally found a fucking skeleton.
They
on
would
the
have
ground
stumbled across like... it all. So the detective was like, let's go talk to Juliana. Let's go talk to his wife and see if we can find something out.
Oh my
she
God.
Did the same thing and asked Juliana if she could search the property.
You ever been to a gay bar? What?
Like, who is that?
No.
She didn't mention any of that, obviously. She just literally asked straight away if she could search the property. And Juliana said, we have been married for 25 years and that he's never even so much as put a bruise on me, even by accident. Get some
what
proof.
The fuck?
And then I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally, like, you guys don't have a warrant. Why are you coming at me like this? I don't even know who you are. So whatever. So yeah. It was, it's just weird. So Juliana that night obviously went back to Herb and was like, hey, you know, like the police came and asked me some questions, wanted to search. And he again said like, oh, no, it was just a disgruntled employee. You know, they're investigating that stuff. Well, at this time, things started going bad for the family.
Oh.
The business started doing really bad and the bills started going unpaid. Herb basically wiped out all the savings and the accounts they had, and they had he just randomly closed one of the stores. So like just randomly. And she's like, what are you doing? And so Herb eventually had to, like, she was basically like, you got to move out. We're separating right now. So Herb moved out of the house and into the 3-car garage they had at the house, which was used as the guest house. So I want to say they're paying about $16,000 a month in mortgage. So I would say that they had 2 thrift stores. And yeah, their business might be doing good, but if there was a slight downtick at any time, they would not be able to afford this house.
Really? He was just killing all those people to save money on clothes to sell at the store.
That's how he got the donations.
They
forcible
did
donations.
How come y'all only ever have like boys medium to large here? What's up with that?
That's a big seller. People would kill for this. Well, they eventually filed for divorce.
Aww.
Juliana was getting more and more weirded out by Herb.
Now that I think about it.
Weekend, Herb left to take their son to his parents' condo in Lake Wawasee. Basically, they'd go there whenever during the summer just to kind of get away from it.
Yeah.
Juliana, this time, called her lawyer. And her lawyer said, I think it's time you allow the detectives to search the property.
Okay.
Because of all, it's been so long, but they're just sitting there like, okay, like, I think it's time that, you know, if you're feeling these weird things. Yeah, it's the same lawyer.
He just keeps calling and confessing shit. We aren't even asking him to.
Yeah. Well, she allowed them to search the properties, and they sent for a forensic anthropologist. Basically, he was like, okay, you know, you saw bones here, right? You know, the son found the bones. And she's like, hey, we need somebody to look at this because they might be human bones. And the forensic anthropologist literally looked at it for 1 second and was like, them's human bones. They were also recently just put there.
Oh, my God.
It's fresh.
Oh, like that bone dust. So the detectives were then sent to pick up her son from Herbert because she's like, I don't think that my son should be with this guy.
Why wouldn't they just call the local police and have the local police drive 5 minutes down the road and get him instead of driving hours away?
Well, because they didn't know what was going on. They also had local police with them.
No, I mean, why didn't they just call up to the cabin or the house or whatever and then realize, or that area, and be like, hey, you know, da-da-da-da-da, this is a situation, send some cops out there. It's like a 2.5-hour drive.
Well, it's also because there's no...
I don't know why I'm trying to all of a sudden jump in with, like, this would have made sense. I'm sorry. I forgot who we were talking about here.
None of this made sense. So they drove up there also because there's no official reason to why they can, because there's still no evidence that
did this.
Well,
then what are they going to... Never mind. Sorry. I don't know why. Basically, I took a turn, and finally the humor wore off, and I'm just like, God, these people are fucking stupid.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the detectives and local police showed up to
his
house,
Herb's
just like,
damn it.
Fuck. And he knew, you know, whether they found anything on the lawn or not, he knew and had any evidence, he knew that, like, I gotta go. You know? But, and I want to say this because, like, laws are written in certain ways and for good and bad. But I want to say, because the way that the law was set up, and there wasn't enough evidence to convict Herb, detectives were afraid that Herb's lawyer would ask for a speedy trial, which meant that the trial would have to be set up in 70 days and would not give them enough time to gather the evidence, right? So even though this looks like the most open and shut case of all time,
just need another 12 years.
Still circumstantial. literally, they could not prove that he did this. And it I don't know. I get angry at stuff like this because, like, God, you had 12 years. You had so long to find clues.
You had so time to plan.
You had time to plan.
To, like, come in with a warrant.
You literally...
And then actually look through the place and find potentially 20, 30, 40 bodies everywhere.
You found the bones.
Immediately. You know? I'm just saying, that's promising. There might be more. And guess what? That's going to open up enough of a case with the judge to be like, yeah, you probably should go look at this property.
Yep.
And then he turns around and takes off his wig.
Hi, my name's Brian Dumb. Well, Herb, again, want to say smartly, had not buried the bodies, as I said earlier.
Put them on the bodies. Roof. Nobody looks up.
The bodies were left to decompose on the ground. And then after that, he poured gasoline on them and burned them.
Nothing about that is smart.
It's actually smarter because they decomposed. They lost all of the flesh, so they couldn't see that there was ligature marks on the dead bodies.
Jesus
they
Christ.
They couldn't get any DNA off of them
but
because
like
they literally...
How many months is that just a body smelling literally like a dead body
well, you have to
in
think
the woods on your own property?
There's 18 acres. On this, that's a lot.
Yeah, I know. I know
through.
That's big, but like
basically, like the Biltmore.
That's no. The Biltmore is
Biltmore's
way
like
bigger
thousands
than that.
Of acres.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, 18 acres so, is a lot. But I'm just saying. Again, I don't know why I'm trying to throw in common sense at any point in this fucking story. I should have known 5 seconds in. But like, you're still leaving. Okay, my only comparison to this here, Betsy, judge me for it. Is like when I was like freshman to I guess junior year in high school, I was growing weed on this like small patch of land that like my family didn't technically own. It just kind of butted up against our house, but like it was basically our property. It was overgrown, so it's not legally tied to us. I was paranoid the whole fucking summer and into the fall because the whole time, you know, somebody looks out the window in the right way or the leaves blow like this or da 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 da, like. Something that could get you in trouble is right the fuck over there.
Yep.
Like it, you know, brought me paranoia constantly. Like 50 fucking bodies just laying around your property.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude's like, save more money, save more. I'm just like going along with life so happy. It's like going up to my parents' place this weekend again. Like, it's insane.
To see the duality
and
too.
And you have little kids
different...
too.
Yeah. And
you guys
to see
need
his...
to stop playing video. I mean, no, keep playing video games. You're not allowed to go outside. Like,
don't look out
do?
The window. Yeah, don't look out the window for the next 3 days.
That and well, bitches.
That's what they found. They also, you know, as we're saying, they found 5,500 bones
Jesus.
In the property. So a couple thousand of the bones, it's still like so crazy to me. A couple thousand bones were just laying in the woods. Like, just left them all out, you know? And
yeah.
Animals, obviously, over time, had ripped at the skins, ripped at the clothes, and just, like, moved them this way and that. So, you know, a lot of bones weren't really together the whole time.
I grew up not far from there. I grew up in Northwest Ohio. Like, kind of, you know, like, meh. Geographically, climate-wise, and shit, very similar. There aren't any big predators out there to do that. Even the scavengers, like, that shit would take forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there might be some like coyotes and stuff out there. I don't even know if somebody writes somebody and tells somebody and then have them tell us. Do coyotes even like fuck with like dead humans? I feel like that's, I don't know. I feel like across the board, humans are known for tasting like shit and we just don't. A lot of animals actually don't like eating us, but I don't know. I just don't know what the hell would have helped it decompose fast. That's what I'm saying. Like that shit was out there for a long
pigs.
Time.
Pigs. You need the pigs for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like a
Pee
Wee Gaskins, you know what I'm saying? He had it.
Yes.
He had them. He had,
he was smart.
What was it, Creed or
Nickelback? It was Nickelback that played
band.
It his.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Nickelback played there. Motorcycle gangs, you know, he knew how to run a serial killer operation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the most interesting part of this to me is there was a creek on his property as well. And that's where most all of the bones were laying themselves already. So they found a couple more thousand bones in the creek. And I want to say that there's a theory behind why this happens, right? So the theory behind all the bones laid out is that the creek is originally where he started stashing the first bones and bodies. Mm-hmm. And that was farther away from his house, right? And slowly over time, they got closer to the house because he just got lazier, you know? After a long time of killing, serial killers start to get lazier and lazier. I think there's a quote that Ted Bundy said best. It's like changing a tire. The first time you're careful, by the 30th time, you can't remember where you left the lug wrench. And I thought that was such a great quote for this because over time, bodies just get closer and closer and closer to the house.
I think it was weird that you got that like put on you as a tattoo. But yes, it is a great quote, Joey.
People have gotten worse quotes on their bodies, so.
Yeah.
His comebacks are getting worse. I'm getting suspicious.
This is what I've been saying. I would not be surprised.
Well, I mean, I do help run a murder podcast and true crime. And, you know, sometimes you have to eventually create content, guys. Okay?
No, you're crushing it. You're crushing it. Nay.
Why do you think I'm here?
Alibis?
That's a good reason. The story, it came out on Sunday, so it's obviously me. I was recording
Stay
all day
home.
Sunday. We didn't record it ahead of time.
What time did
Sunday.
You say it happened? We were recording then.
We're recording, yep. They would never know. Well, after the detectives and the researchers found all the bones, and the story was leaked to the news media. And like
always
this is
did.
Like right as it happens. So Herb's sitting in the condo without, you know, the detectives just came and took the kids, and he's just like, oh shit. Yeah. He's seeing all these bones being found on this property, his property, him and his wife's property, and he's just like, I think it's time to leave. Herb took his car and fled. But he fled, obviously, north, because that's the closest way he can get. He's not going to Mexico. He's going to Canada. He stopped right before he got over the border and asked his brother to wire him some money.
Wait, say it with the accent.
I don't know what you want me to say.
The Canadian accent?
No. No. What?
A moose is a security guard? No. What are you asking, Betsabe?
I'm asking Joey to do with the accent. From the show. From
anyways.
The show. Wire me the money.
Yes. Wire me the money. Yeah, it's from Anna Delvey story. It's the Anna Delvey story that was on Netflix. So another Netflix show.
We should do an episode.
On Anna Delvey?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Was there a reason why he couldn't just go into Canada and get the money wired to him?
I think he just called over the, because he didn't want anybody to follow him into Canada. Well, because they traced
these calls.
They
don't have real
calls.
Money in Canada. I got to get it here.
Because they traced these calls, so they knew that it could have traced the call to him, so they didn't want.
I don't think he was thinking into that.
I don't know. Well, he made it into Canada, because obviously
he
wasn't.
Walk across back then, yeah.
Yeah. He can walk backwards. So it was noted that he was eventually seen by a Mountie, who told him he couldn't sleep there because he was sleeping underneath a bridge and because he was in his car and he didn't have anywhere else to go. So he slept underneath a bridge and a Mountie comes up and is like, hey, you can't sleep there. And so
there's been bears in the area. And he's like, you Canadians are very rude.
He's like, please leave, Canadians. And he's like, you're in our turf. Get out of here. So the Mountie noted that there was an obscene amount of videotapes in the back of his car.
Weird.
So, it was also never known what was on them.
Can you quantify that for me? Was
obviously
it like
12? Porn.
100.
Damn.
In his car.
Okay.
And so the author really made it known that
The second he got to Canada, the first cop that comes along spots something suspicious. And what is that suspicion? A large number of videotapes. That was enough for them to take action. Meanwhile, down in Indianapolis, can we come on your farm yet? No. Damn it.
Oh, there's bones there? Oh,
we found
we'll
some bones earlier. I don't care. Damn it.
Yeah.
Again, well, it's Indianapolis.
Yep, it's Indy. So
Indianapolis.
It was never known what was on the tapes because they never found the tapes, which is super weird. What has been suspected is that he taped all his murders.
Slipcoat
he taped
style.
Or porn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to him, that's just one and the same.
True.
You know? Well, he arrived in Ontario, and, you know, he's just sitting there thinking about what he's done, and so he's like, okay, I'm going to end it.
Just
and he wrote his...
over at some, like, garden hose that's wrapped up hanging on the wall. <He's> like...
Yeah. Good times. In the arms of an angel. So he wrote a suicide note. And
cute.
And in the suicide note, cute.
The final come.
The final come down. So he apologized for the financial ruin that he put upon the family.
I'm sorry.
So he never mentioned all the people he murdered. He just said, he said he really apologized for the ruining the family and all the financial ruin because he drained all their bank accounts. And
damn.
Then in the letter, he wanted to point out specifically that he only put one bullet in the gun. Just one, because if a child found the gun after he killed himself, he didn't want the child to hurt himself. And
thoughtful.
If this child saw the gun and the guy before, the child's going to have way more messed up feelings than just the gun.
He thinks about that, but not all the bones that are in the yard that his kids are playing in. What the fuck?
Yep. Or the families that he ruined.
Yeah, or that, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. He could really just only afford one bullet at the time. And
yeah,
he's like,
oh,
basically.
Probably
damn
too,
it,
yeah.
how do I put that in here? Because they're going to wonder. They're going to be like, oh, he only got one bullet. He must have only had one bullet in the gun. This guy was fucking broke. Hey, we got a loser over here. And he's like, no, I could have totally bought more, but the store was out. And I also love kids. Yes, I love kids very much in a totally legitimate way. And I don't want them to find the extra bullets or the gun, which is why after I shoot myself, I will eat the gun.
Literally. And then at the end of the note, he was just like, he made this whole diatribe about being like, and the fucking banks, and they didn't get the wire the money. Sorry, another Anna Delvey quote. If you guys watch it, great, great show. She was interesting.
She was a genius in comparison to this guy.
She was ahead of her time.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing at the end of his note was, in quote, I'm going to eat a peanut butter sandwich and then go to sleep.
Oh my God. That's why you like peanut butter sandwiches.
I am having.
They are pretty good.
I'm a huge peanut butter sandwich fan.
I think he likes jelly, though. I don't.
Peanut butter sandwich fan?
Yep.
You and me?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's just peanut butter. Joey only
I don't like jelly.
Peanut butter sandwich.
Okay, whatever. And lettuce is just fucking leaves. Whatever. I don't get your point. I'm just this. All right. You know, like as this portion of the story is like kind of closing up, right? As he kind of like opened up there. Like I'm feeling bad for all. Well, I'm not fully feeling bad for making fun. I'm feeling bad a little bit for making fun of him because it just seems like there was a lot of lead in the water in this area and that nobody ever found it. That's honestly kind of what it seems like. It like there's a lot of paint eating, you know, just nepotism in the local police department. It seems to be some other issues going on in Indy. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they pretty much went from serial killer to serial killer, literally in the same town, the same road, who had this almost the same demographic of people. With just a different, you know, different style of killing. So they kind of, I remember we talked, I think it was me and you, Gil, we talked about the lead-based theory of like serial killers, you know, murdering just because a lot of lead. And, you know, I'd heard that from somewhere else. So it wasn't just my theory. It was kind of something that I'd heard talked about. So I kind of think it did help a lot.
Yeah.
Well, he put the gun barrel to his forehead. And boom, it was all over.
Boom, boom, boom.
He committed suicide without, don't say all. It's glad he did this, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But he didn't get justice, and he never gave justice to the families, which is kind of the sad thing.
He got
sad
the easy
thing.
Way out.
Yep. He committed suicide without acknowledging any of the murders or bad things he had done. All he wanted to apologize for was spending all the family's money. They were never actually able to pin these murders on Herb or the murders for I-70 Strangler on him, but there were literally no other suspects.
Jesus. Well, that's not surprising.
Yeah, right? And the amount on the bones on the farm say that there was way more than 9 people's bodies. I think we, you know, figured out it was could be more closer to 26. There might be more than that. Who knows? And they're still finding people as of yesterday. So, yeah, I just saw an article about that when I was researching this. And what is sad is that, you know, that they're using DNA now to find who these people are. And there was a cool thing at, you know, it's kind of cool when I heard about it, that the actual Indy office, I think they said it was around like $1,500 to do a DNA test to see if you could find missing people, right? So they test the DNA of the missing person or the body that they found with the family's DNA. So like the mother would give DNA, right?
Yeah.
And it's $1,500 to do this test, right?
Okay. Huh.
A lot of people can't afford $1,500, even if they're looking for this.
I'm not going to feel sorry for this police department. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's help out because the prosecutor's office actually got so many donations and put a lot of money into it to lower the price. So okay. They got it down to $600. And
that's
like
a new year, 600.
Yeah. And you know, like it does cost money to do this. So I understand.
Yeah, of course.
But the way that they did that was just like, that was great. And so those 9 people were helped be ID'd because the prosecuting office helped do this. And it was just it was good to see that because obviously otherwise a lot of people weren't going to be ID'd and a lot of people's families aren't going to have closure that this person murdered them. And so sadly ends the story of Herbert Baumeister. But it does not end our story. We will be getting into more haunting things next week dealing with the actual property, Fox Hollow Farm, and the murders Herbert Baumeister committed. So come back next week for some ghoulish tales as we prepare for Halloween.
Thank you so much for listening to the Black Cat Report in our episode 68 on Herbert Baumeister and Fox Hollow Farm Part 1. We'll have Part 2 airing next week. Also, don't forget to send us your spooky, ghoulish stories for our special Halloween episode. Rate us on Apple Podcasts because it helps a ton. And then we'll see you on the other side.